AMC near you.
Oh my gosh, they're not gonna be able to hear us over this. Hey, what's up, Fright School? It's Joshua here.
And Joe.
And we are so excited because we are at the theater to see the new Candyman movie. So stay tuned for the episode.
That's what we're seeing?
Right.
Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
All right, welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua. What are you doing?
I've been lazy most of the morning. I'm supposed to be doing laundry today on this beautiful morn, but I have yet to start, and now it's past noon, so I don't know if it'll happen or not.
you don't send yours out to a laundress?
I don't. I do my own laundry. I'm very grounded that way. What about you? What are you doing? How's your morning been?
It's good. I'm very sore today.
I'm sorry.
I mean, like, it's fine. I'm pretty sore because yesterday I was hanging out with Jimmy Kins and his friends who are the gay bowlers, the gay city bowlers. And we were at a little pool party, and you know, one thing about the pool is that it's anti-gravity, or, you know, weightlessness. And so I was doing all kinds of things underwater that I normally wouldn't be able to do on the dry land. And then when I got home, it all caught up with me.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. I hope that you feel better quickly.
Thank you. I also drank yesterday.
Oh, did you? That's a rarity.
Yeah, I had Jameson and ginger.
Oh, yum.
And then I took a shot of something. Some like
ginger beer or ginger ale?
Ginger ale.
Okay.
So it was, I think it would have been a lot, it would have been really good with ginger beer because the spice was really nice.
So. Yeah. Yeah, we make those sometimes when we have ginger beer in the house. But I also love whiskey with ginger ale. You know, Jack and ginger, Jameson and ginger, mm-hmm. Any of those is lovely. Yeah. You know. well, oh my gosh. So we are here today because we went on a field trip, a Fright School field trip. Imagine that.
We did, and it wasn't just us.
I know, it wasn't just us. It was there were others there. It was kind of crazy. We got Crystal to come, who is you know, friend of both of ours, who does not like horror films. She's been joining us though, because we've been doing American Horror Story obviously on Wednesdays, and she and her husband Eric have been joining us, and so that's been fun. So we talked her into going to see the Candyman 2021. So that was exciting, but so we're here just to, you know, give you the rundown, give you our thoughts on the new Candyman,
on the Candymans,
as it turns out. But we'll get to that.
What is it? The assigned candy at birth. What is it? The Candyman.
Candy thems.
The candy thems. The ACABs.
There we go. That's a totally different take on that. I'm sure we could really unpack that talking about this this film, you know, the mm-hmm. All cops are bastards, or all cops are bad, or all cops are,
oh yeah, you know.
Anyways, but you know, we'll get
double meaning.
We'll get to that.
ACAB has a double meaning.
Yeah, so so we're here today to discuss the latest Candyman film. It's a direct sequel to the original from 1992. Long delayed, right? I mean, it was supposed to be at, well, I guess not long. It was like everything pushed back about a year or so. due to the COVID-19, the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic that we're finding ourselves perpetually situation. Stuck in, like some kind of cold, thick honey. So we've got Nia DaCosta on direction. Yay. Screenplay by DaCosta, Wynn Rosenfeld, and Jordan Peele. Obviously, this is all the Candyman series is based in the original novella by Clive Barker called The Forbidden, which I actually reread this morning because I haven't read it since we did our first Candyman, you know, when we did the original Candyman for the show, man, like 100 episodes ago. I think it's in the 40s or 50s.
Yeah, easily.
We have so many episodes now. Yeah, we've got... Sorry, I just totally spaced on what I was going to say. Talk about the cast. Josephine.
Yes. All right.
We've got... now, his name is Yahya.
Yahya. I've been saying Yahya.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen II.
Yahya. Maybe Yahya. Yahya.
Tiana Paris. Nathan Stewart Jarrett, Coleman Domingo, along with Vanessa Williams, who is reprising her role as Anne-Marie from the original. Tony Todd makes a little cameo, and Virginia Madsen has a vocal cameo. So very exciting. You know, they're tying the original to this new sequel. Obviously, Jordan Peele on production. It's produced by his company, Monkey Paw Productions. All of that. And we had the pleasure to go see it together, and it was super fun in the movie theater. Look at that. What did you think, Joe?
Oh, it was so much fun. I loved it. It's nice to be going back to the cinema. I mean, you know, with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, it's, you know, I've been really intentional about the films that I see at the cinema. And so it was really, really fun to go and in the middle of the day again, because they now have more showings during the afternoon time.
Yeah.
So it was nice to go during the day. It was nice to see all of you. It was nice to have, I don't know if you saw, but like I got my popcorn that I ate for a little bit, but I ended up taking them mostly, is it was Chicago style, you know, with the cheese popcorn and the kettle corn. So so I did a little, so, you know, as a tribute to Candyman and Cabrini Green. That was my intention.
Wow.
Yeah, but otherwise, the film itself was really fantastic. I'm looking forward to hopefully more Candyman films.
Yeah, I am very curious if they'll like expand and tell more stories, or if they're going to kind of continue this, you know, because it does leave, you know, on a bit of a cliffhanger, you know. Or, I mean, not exactly. I mean, it's perfectly fine if this is it and this is the end of the, you know, of the film, and they don't do another one. But they could. There was definitely room for more story to be told if they so wanted to. Yeah, I also enjoyed it. It kind of took, I had to like kind of think a little bit about it, you know, and sit with it for a couple days while I figured out exactly sort of what I thought. Because like right after, I don't know, maybe it's because it's just been postponed and I've been like, and it's been announced, you know, for a couple of years, you know, even before it was originally supposed to be released. So it's been on our minds, like thinking like, oh, you know, the new Candyman is going to come. So like how, like maybe... hyping it up a little bit in my mind. So I was curious to see how it would play out. And so I did really enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to seeing it again. I want to go see it again soon, actually. I'd like to find another day just to go see it in the theater again, because it was so it was really good. But just to kind of like talk a little bit about it.
Also, spoiler alert, right? This is a new film. We do want people to see it. So before we get into the particulars and spoiling the shit out of it, pause this, go see it, and come back to this episode.
Very wise words, Joe. So Dread Central put out an article written by Andrew, no last name, just Andrew.
Okay, Andrew.
Right, okay. Editorials, Be My Victim, Nia DaCosta's Candyman, and The Insidious History of Racism in the United States. Nia DaCosta's film expands on the lore of the horror classic to tell a story about the brutalization of the black male body both then and now. And so it's kind of examining, you know, in the first part of the article, really dives into the original Candyman, kind of talking about, you know, that story there, and obviously the Daniel Robitaille. It's kind of really both the first two films, because the, you know, they expand a lot more in the sequel, and exploring, you know, that history. But this also, I think, is what I like about this film, is that they are kind of taking on that, you know, this story about, you know, not only the brutalization of the black body, but also the, like, the what's, like, the word, like, the monstrifying of black men, you know, who are in situations where they're, because the, you know, racism, because of white supremacy, you know, because of this, like, building up of the narrative that black men are dangerous, are, you know, monstrous, are animalistic, you know, that they're a threat to white women in particular. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the whole, like anything, you know, everything is a threat to, you know, the happy white family living in the suburbs sort of idea. So this article kind of ties in. It starts with, like, talking about, like, Birth of a Nation, you know, which we've discussed in context with horror noir, is one of the kind of those early horror films that depicts, you know, I mean, the monsters in the movie are black men, you know, and yeah, that white women have to be protected. And so I like how this story is kind of taking that on and, you know, using that history to kind of create these sort of one part sort of vigilante kind of justice, in one way, and then also just kind of using that as a way to, you know, kind of, I mean, I think the original Candyman in a way sort of reinforces, you know, by using, by having Candyman be a black man who's been, like, brutalized by white people, but then he comes back to hunt this, like, white woman down, and he's, mm-hmm, like, obsessed with it, you know. So some of the imagery they play with kind of plays with those same sort of, stereotypes to some degree, you know. That's, yeah, kind of the discussion that happens with Candyman, is like, what is it exactly trying to say or prove or not prove? Like, what was the point of you know, of having him be, like, the first black slasher in a way? But, you know, again, it's, you know, it's all kind of structured in the same. If you're going to have a white person writing and white people making those sorts of decisions, you know, what sorts of, mm-hmm, implicit or even explicit, like, biases kind of creep in. But anyways, the point is that, yeah, so this article is kind of tying that in. And then I was also thinking of Angela Davis in Women, Race, and Class. She talks a lot about, like, the myth of the black male rapist and, you know, this sort of idea that after the Civil War, after Reconstruction, you know, everybody kind of had this hope that things would be better, you know, obviously, especially people who had been formerly enslaved, you know, who now had the ability to hold office or to have, you know, this sort of, you know, they were more empowered. And because of the threat of that, you know, and then the North kind of pulling away and kind of leaving the South to its own devices, this allowed sort of the KKK to rise and all of this. And one of the ways that they sort of drove a wedge, I think, in between, like, working class people, white, black, everybody, you know, who maybe had a lot more of the same interests in mind, you know, they had common interests, being poor, like being labor class, this creation of, like, this black male rapist myth, fantasy of, like, white vigilantism, white, you know, the Ku Klux Klan helped, like, you know, divide people more, even though, like, white men were going around, you know, raping black women and were far more of a threat to the safety of all women, regardless of color. But again, you know, that's always sort of that that fantasy there. But anyways, I just think that all is, that's kind of all informing what Jordan Peele and Nia DaCosta are doing. Well, I'd say the director, obviously, but I mean, they all wrote it together. I think that's kind of informing some of the conversation that's happening in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think one thing that we brought up after the film was kind of what was brought up in Horror Noir, where it's like, oh, you know, Candyman comes out and he's like terrorizing the people of Cabrini Green, but they're all black folks, when he could, you know, just as easily terrorize the white folks, you know, bring out. And I feel like this film is kind of retconning that to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. It's also like completely and entirely possible in the kind of world and the mythology of the film is also, because if you think about the end of the first Candyman, where Helen comes back, right?
So right.
You see that in this way, because when you die at the hands of Candyman or whatever, you come back as, you know, you're reborn in this way, in this kind of vengeful spirit type of way. And so seeing that also kind of play out, but now it's in a different form. And also I think it's also part of it is intention, right? Because the whole stuff with Burke at the end was kind of confusing as to like his reasoning for it. He was actively trying to take the, redo the mythos of Candyman. And instead of being the spooky story that we tell, like black people in the hood tell each other to keep each other in line, this is a way for him to be, to recreate it in his image in terms of like, be a vigilante for justice, and Candyman is the hero of the hood instead.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, that's kind of always the through line has always sort of been that Candyman, the original, like Daniel Robitaille, you know, was just, you know, in love with this white woman and they were going to have a baby, at least, again, using the first two films story, which I think largely this new Candyman really ignores the sequels. It's kind of just dealing with the story from the original. Mm-hmm. You know, but still he was like a victim of vigilante justice, and then he's sort of like haunting, you know, this area of Cabrini Green. But like you were saying, he's able, I mean, in the original, he's obviously kind of corporeal. He's able to travel. He goes to Helen's place. He goes to, you know, the hospital that she's being held in, you know, so obviously he can choose where to go. But again, he's also indiscriminate. Like if you're going to say his name, like right in the very beginning of the film, the person recounting, you know, this tale, it's about a white babysitter and her boyfriend coming over, and they do the whole Candyman thing and he shows up and kills her. So it's not as if he is stuck just there, but that the legend is there. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of spreads, you know, from there. But still, yeah, I think that's always something that gets brought up. It's like, why is he haunting this place? Like, why isn't he, you know, going after, as is stated in Horror Noir, you know, the people most likely descendant and responsible for the pain, you know, that he has experienced and the loss. But again, you know, maybe he was just really waiting around for Helen. He was just waiting for, I think her name's Caroline I think that's the woman's mm-hmm. name in Candyman 2, and it's called Farewell to the Flesh. I think her name's Caroline, and that's who Helen is, like either a descendant of or a reincarnation of or something like that. But you're right. In this new one, they are kind of playing with sort of changing that, because like Cabrini Green is being gentrified. Obviously, that's a big conversation within this film, is like gentrification and, you know, what kind of what the projects, quote unquote, existed as and then, you know, changed to, or how, like, you know, that happens, how the ghetto, quote unquote, is created. Mm-hmm. Jacobin actually had an article out as well that I'm going to link, called Candyman Rings Terror Out of the Horror of Gentrification. Candyman suggests that the ghosts of the displaced won't disappear so easily. So it's kind of analyzing it from more, and again, this is sort of a democratic socialist media. You know, so they're kind of examining like those, the clash of like the rich and the poor, and how the poor are kind of being pushed out further and further away, you know, from places that they maybe that did have community, and sort of, so how that has changed, what Chicago is like, and, you know, particularly where Cabrini Green used to be set. Cause I think I do believe that it's gone, or it has been redeveloped, which is sort of interesting to think about, like that conversation of like public property that has been built to help, you know, for low income, you know, people to have like housing they can afford and a place that they can afford close to, hopefully, to jobs and other, you know, the choices that you can make living, you know, in a city versus being kind of pushed out away from the urban core, but how that land gets then taken and sold to developers to put like expensive condos on. It's really like fucked up, but that's obviously a big conversation. I mean, that's like literally one of the conversations they have in the film is like, who's responsible? Because, you know, you have this white art critic that comes in. So the main character, Anthony, who is the baby from the original film, baby Anthony, is now an artist, you know, some 30 years later. And, you know, he's wanting to, he's inspired by this story that he gets told, which I actually really love at the beginning, how they're telling the story and it's not right, based at least on the film, you know, that they kind of do this retelling of Candyman using these really cool shadow puppets. I really liked all of that. I really, really enjoyed the shadow puppetry that they used throughout the film to kind of tell these stories and to describe the events. But so anyways, at the beginning, they're kind of telling Helen's story, and it's not right. It's completely, you know, kind of what happens when it's retold time and time again. It's become, you know, distorted. So I really enjoy that. So he's inspired by this, you know, he's going to Cabrini Green, he's getting, you know, into the whole thing of, you know, the history of it, and then meets Burke, like you were talking, William Burke, who at the beginning of the film is shown as a child who kind of inadvertently causes the death of, what was his name? Sherman. Who Sherman is like this. Fields, I think. Yeah. Sherman Fields. I think that's right. Who is this like, man, it is very like Candyman. He's got like the coat on and he's got a hook for a hand, but like, you know, like a prosthetic hook, and turns out to be a perfectly innocent person.
Simple guy.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of is given that sort of context that, you know, he's just, you know, probably houseless. He's got candy's given to kids, but somehow some of the candy, not coming from him, but someone else, but it has razor blades in it. So obviously you get scapegoated. And so that's kind of what kicks off that whole, that interest with Anthony, is this like how black men in particular, I do think this film largely ignores the plight of black women to some extent. I mean, they do go into a little bit of like the professional expectations that are on, oh, what's her name? What's her character's name?
Brianna.
Yeah. That's Tiana Paris. Is that how you say her name? Or is it Tiana? Tiana
Paris, yes.
Yeah, Tiana Paris.
This is her year. This is her year.
I know. You were like excited. but anyway, so they're kind of jumping around. Sorry, I'm jumping around. But so he's inspired by this story, and that's kind of what puts him on this path. And then he's sort of like, it kind of takes a, like a Freddy's Revenge kind of deal, where it feels like he's like he's become infected by Candyman. He's like slowly turning into, you know, he gets stung by a bee and then that like spreads. It's very, it's got some moments of body horror that are kind of gross, like The Fly, you know, but he's like in becoming monstrous, like literally.
Well, so there was a point where I was like, okay, so it sounds like Candyman has chosen him to be the next one, you know?
Right.
Like, what'd he say to Helen? Be my victim, you know, be my victim. And it's very, like you said, very Freddy's Revenge. And in my mind, I was like, okay, is Candyman bi? Because, you know, I mean, again, when you're an avengeful spirit lost to eternity, I guess, you know, it's the height of folly to think that you could just choose one sexuality, because, you know, in the 90s it was all about Virginia Madsen, and now, you know, we have, you know, Yahya Abdul-Mateen. And so you know, maybe Candyman is bi and he's just trying to.
Well, we'll have to save that for, you know, like a future rewatch to unpack the queerness. Right now, we're just going to stick with like the racial tensions that are
brought, but, you know, to bear. Again, we'll have TJ on to talk about.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, yeah. To bring the queerness to Candyman 2021. But I kind of go back a little bit because I wanted to establish that he become an artist and Anthony within the film. And so there's that lovely conversation with the art critic, this white woman who's like kind of telling him like what it's like to be, you know, gentrified. And then she's like,
she blames him for being gentrified.
Yeah. He's trying to make this comment and she's like, well, it's really you artists that like come in and, you know, make the place. And then he comes back later to her place and they have this more in-depth conversation about like, you know, being othered and being pushed out and like what it means to have your government, like, you know, actively work against you and to take resources from your neighborhood. And like, that's where it starts, is like, you know, sucking like the life out of a neighborhood and then selling it off to developers and kicking the people out. So it was just this kind of great conversation throughout about, you sort of this one problem of gentrification, particularly as it's affecting Chicago and as it's affected Cabrini Green, mm-hmm. this place that kind of for a long time, I think in the 90s, especially, was sort of synonymous with like the projects, you know, this idea of like, you know, what Cabrini Green was, you know, to people who maybe didn't really understand. Something that I think the original film was a little bit more sympathetic towards, you know, by talking about like, you know, these are people trying to live their life as best they can. It's not just like a den of, you know, drug dealers and criminals, as, you know, people kind of think it is. They kind of added this, I think, a little bit more of a humanizing effect to the original. This, that kind of is all lacking, you know, because this film, they're gone largely, like the people that live there. And so it's just kind of like a husk, you know, of what's left standing to be waiting to be torn down that Anthony's investigating, taking pictures in and, you know, starting to build up the, you know, the material that's going to inform his artwork. And then, so then back to kind of the other conversation then happening is sort of about, well, not sort of, it is about police violence. There's that great scene where he's walking through and he hears a police siren. He like jumps back and presses himself up against the building. Now, whether or not he was like not supposed to be there because it's, you know, it's all chained off or condemned or whatever, or if it was just like the, like, you know, that reaction that, I think probably a lot of people have, whether or not they're doing something wrong or not. And like, if you hear the police, you kind of immediately like panic because our culture, you know, we're seeing so much violence against innocent people be ratified, you know, on a constant basis through state violence, police violence. But it was just kind of it was one of those moments in the film that was just like, you know, like, yeah, dude, hide, like, you know, and like put the camera down, like don't have anything in your hands, because you just, you know, it's very,
yeah,
it's just so insidious, this sort of violence at the hands of police. And that's kind of echoed through, you know, because they hint at like Emmett Till and, you know, his brutal death, not at the hands of police, but again, vigilante justice. Sherman Fields in the film, it is the police. You know, there's been plenty of, you know, martyrs to this sort of, violence. And so to have that kind of become, as we started off by saying, the Candy Men, you know, and mm-hmm. it's said in the film as well, the Candyman is like the whole hive now, because there's just so much of this story that there's all of these like spirits that can inhabit, this role.
Yeah.
I too was a little confused. I went back and kind of reread like the synopsis of the film, and in reading the other, you know, some of these papers and things that are writing about it, the Burke situation, I think, is a little bit more clear to me than when I first left it. Cause that was the thing when I left, I was just kind of like, why did Burke, like, I was kind of confused about what his role was, like what he was mm-hmm. trying to do, but it just sounds like he was, again, like you said earlier, like creating this sort of a new martyr, a new figure that would avenge in a way rather than be just a, just like a monster, you know, yeah. from like a Bloody Mary type, you know, mm-hmm. ghoul that you're summoning.
Which I think you see, like, I think that is what that'll be interesting to see in like a sequel, right? Because when at the end of the film, Brianna's in handcuffs in the back of a police car, the policeman is basically telling her what she should say, like, for her own good, she should say that this is what happened. And, you know, in this very subtle but not so subtle way of coercing her to corroborate his version of events. And then she, you know, asks to see the rearview mirror, says Candyman 5 times. And then what's great is that, like, halfway through, she, like, the intention changes in the saying of it. And you read it all in her face that, like, you know, basically, like, it's not like, you know, oh, Candyman, you know, come and kill me. It's Candyman, please avenge me.
Right. Help me.
Help yeah. me. Exactly. Intercede for me. And then that's exactly what happens with the newly resurrected version of Candyman, which is Anthony instead of Sherman, which it had been for most of the film. And then at the very, very end, you see the cameo by Tony Todd as the original Candyman looks right at Brianna and says, "Tell everyone." And yeah. I think at this point, we're supposed to believe that, like, future subsequent Candyman sequels will be like, "Hey, did you hear? If you're in trouble with the cops, look into a mirror and say Candyman 5 times, and he'll come and, you know, he'll come and help you," something like that.
Yeah, I like at the end of this, the Dread Central article, it says, "The tell everyone demand is not just a reference to the fact Candyman believes his malevolent nature is nurtured within the power of his myth. It is also a demand that every audience member understands that as long as racism exists, it will continue to destroy black lives and eventually the lives of everybody in the vicinity. That is the terrifying idea at the core of these movies. DaCosta has created a horrific fable about the brutal cost of racism within society while expanding that theme from the original movie through scale and gravitas." Which I think that's kind of what, as we were leaving, Zakiya, who's been on the show before, had said that, because I was trying to grapple with, like, Burke's, you know, William Burke's motivation, and, you know, and then we were kind of talking a little bit about that, you know, critique that Candyman is preying on, like, the black community. And I really like how she said that, kind of like, well, that's sort of how violence works, you know, that it, mm-hmm. you know, it gets perpetuated within communities and then it spreads. And that's obviously, you know, it's sort of like echoes. So, you know, you have this violence against you and that violence then is turned on others, you know, like you to some extent, and then spills back out into the larger community. And we see that kind of play out in this film as, you know, this thing that he experienced 30 years ago and that Helen went through is now sort of being resurrected. And it's, you know, in this, it's spreading in the media, obviously, because people yeah. keep talking about his piece, the Say My Name piece, where he actually tells people to go and look in mirror and say Candyman 5 times as a way to engage with his art. But then that, obviously, it's like a virus, you know, and it's, you know, Candyman shows up and kills these women or, yeah. you know, the high school girls. He's killing the art people.
All white.
You know. Right. You know, lots of white death as well. You know, and so it's kind of like spreading. And then in the media, they keep talking about his piece and it's just like perpetuating it and re-empowering, you know, Candyman himself with, you know, the spreading of that mythology.
Yeah.
But also it echoes the way like violence, you know, gets, you know,
it's crabs in a bucket, right? It's crabs will try. And if you're trying to get out of the bucket, they'll pull you down. And it's right. not so much like, it's not the fact that like the crabs are violent. It's just like, that's what happens when you're crabs in a bucket. You're isolated in your own place. And right. it's not the fault of the crabs. It's the fault of the person who put them in the bucket.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that's we could sit here and have all kinds of metaphoric discussions, but that crabs in a bucket, there we go. candy man's in a candy them's in a bucket.
Yes, the candy them's. yeah, I mean, wow. And to have like Anne Marie come back and be, and basically be the gap, like what happened in the intervening time between original Candyman and now, and the idea that like the community made a covenant to not say his name ever again, to like, you right. know, this is not, just we are not going to, yeah, to let it die. And then for it to be resurrected in this way. And it's almost as if like Burke sees his way to like, and you know, it's not so much like, yes, I'm breaking the covenant and yes, people have died, but I'm doing it because we're going to create something better. We're going to use the tragedy and, you know, and appease his guilt at the same time, but use this tragedy to create a way for us to have a way to fight back.
Yeah, yeah. It's like creating, you know, this sort of a new myth, uh-huh. you know, that's about vengeance and about reclamation of power rather than, you know, pain and brutalization. Mm-hmm. Although through, you know, very brutal killing of this, you know, of Anthony. So it's, you know, it's, again, I mean, there were just parts that I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to like really still think about it. And like I said, I do want to see it again. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I liked revisiting the original Candyman, which I rewatched the night before, rereading the original story. I'm going to watch the sequel because I haven't watched it in a long time, but I'm curious to see how it holds up because I know it gets a lot of criticism as well, but you know, in the intervening years, it seems that it's kind of has a bit of a cult status. And there were mm-hmm. people like even in horror noir, one of the women talking about it was like, you know, I think it gets looked over, but people should revisit it. And there is kind of an interesting story being told there and a conversation that maybe was a little. It wasn't yet. Mature enough, maybe. I don't know, uh-huh. like what the right, you know, but it was like they were trying to have a conversation that wasn't yet, you know,
it wasn't there. Ready for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. So we'll see. I don't know. I want to watch it again and kind of see what I think because it's been so long.
And to have a movie that was, you know, filmed what to probably film 2019. Supposed to have been released in 2020 and then has a 2021 release. You know, obviously this was the events of June 2020 and the uprising and the radical call for accountability and racial justice and all of that could not have been something that we foresaw, especially global pandemic as well. But again, it just shows that how this is just, like, for anyone to say that, like, for anyone to not be, anyone non-black, I should say, to think that, like, oh, what an interesting coincidence. I'm like, no, it's not an interesting coincidence that here's a movie that is very timely and prescient about police violence, state violence, and the victims of state violence, specifically black people. Like, this is a story that is as old as time, as old as this country. I think it's one conversation that the thought that needs to be put out there is the fact that like, oh, you know, oh, good timing that this story came out. And I'm like, well, not good timing. This is something that's always existed. It's just like, it's more magnified now. We are more heightened and aware of it. I would hope that for those of, especially those who were radicalized by the 2016 election and subsequently were like, that were made aware of state violence as well, in the pervasiveness of state violence and racist, white cishet racist patriarchy in America, because of June 2020. And so to kind of go in that with this, in this film, it's a way of being like, yeah, it's so pervasive that we made a movie about it 2 years ago.
Yeah. And yeah. Well, and we've been making movies about it for a long time and having these conversations. Cause again, yeah. People are aware, you know, people do know what's happening. It's just that
they do have been known.
Right? It's just that either they're, well, I don't know. I want to say, like, white people in particular are just being, I think, woken up to, well, no, I don't even want to say that. I don't know. I don't know what exactly I want to say. I mean, I feel like there's people that are perfectly fine with the way things are. Obviously, you have that contingent, you know, that are like, yeah, fine. That's the way things are. Or, you know, you have people that want to make change. It's just we're figuring out how to do that on a larger scale. You know me, I say burn it all down and let's start over, but nobody's taking me up on that yet. I think you're right though, that people will go into this. I think I saw, didn't Matt share something about, like, he heard people criticizing, like, why are they talking about race in this? It's like, did you not?
Were you not watching the first one? Yeah.
Yeah. Are you unaware? Or that, you know, again, horror, that's what horror does. It, you know, again, this film is filled with, like, black history, you know, not, you know, that reflects in black horror, you know, as we've discussed in the past with other films in particular, you know, that is the thesis of horror noir, you know, that history is filled with real existential horror, and the present as well, not just history, obviously. You know, so how does film reflect that? And then how do we continue to survive it every day? So this film does, I think, a good job of kind of creating, like, a little microcosm of that conversation, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. bring of distilling it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it was really good. It's, I do, again, like I said, I want to see it again because I just want to, you know, because now that I know what happens, I can go in and kind of look at it with different eyes. And again, this is another one that I think we'll revisit in a year or two, you know, give it time to sit out there in culture and, you know, see what other sorts of conversations come, come from it. So,
yeah. And then let's not also, like, just put it into, like, its put it into the historical context of film. Right. So this weekend last weekend, because we saw it this past over Labor Day weekend. Last weekend it was released. It was the number one box office earner and it's the first time that a black woman, female black woman director has directed the film who opened at number one in the box office, which is shocking, but also not given everything that we know about the opportunities for black women to direct specifically these types of films. Of course, it's a genre film. This is just further case for why genre films will always do well at the box office. It will all, you know, especially horror. It reminded me a lot of kind of how people were talking about Black Panther in the Marvel universe, right? because they needed it to do well in order for them to, you know, in order for them to, it to, in order for them to, them being Hollywood, to make more of these films. And I think in this situation, it's not a question of them needing to make more Candyman movies, but more of like, this is definitely a movie that is for the culture, as is colloquial, because of how popular and pervasive the franchise is, especially among black fans of the genre.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And again, horror always, you know, exists in that place to, you know, very quickly reflect culture back. So I'm very excited about, again, just like with Get Out, you know, when that came out, I'm just excited to see how the genre continues to change. It continues to find new ways to have old conversations, you know, to some degree. But then also as we continue, hopefully to change and hopefully to shift and, you know, as a species, you know, if we don't all go extinct very shortly, I'm excited to see how it continues to grow. So yeah. Yay. Candyman 2021. go see it. Tell us what you think. I'm already looking forward to, I hope when it comes out on, you know, either demand or whatever, there'll be a Twitter party. We can all go Twitter watch party.
Yeah. And also shout out to my good Judy, my friend Jeannie, who also joined us.
Yes, it was a pleasure to meet her.
Jeannie, I love her. She and I, when we left you at the movies, we ended up standing in the parking lot talking for like an hour and a half. So it was so nice to see her. And she's a listener. She loves us. She's also a local photographer, so go check out her work as well.
We go.
I'll find it and link it in the notes too. So
yeah, nice. Yeah, that's fine because Spirit Halloween turned out to be kind of a bust. They were still setting stuff up. Like they had things for sale. Mm-hmm. We walked in, but it was like it was kind of a nightmare and they were still pulling things out and setting things up, so we didn't find anything. So it was all right that you didn't end up joining us for that. But next time. So, all right. Well, you know, say it five times. See what happens. Joe, do it right now. Look in that mirror. No, I'm kidding.
All right. Are you ready?
No. All right. Stop it. Good night.
Candyman.
And don't be hooked in your, abdomen, because I don't know how to do the editing.
Candyman. And I am not saying it a fifth time. All right, bye. Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California. Ha ha ha!